Well, hello there. Once again, it is I, Vincent Verhey, better known as Big Vinny V from FRWOnline.com. Here we have a very exciting edition of the Big Vinny V Show, a special edition of the Big Vinny V Show, a free edition of the Big Vinny V Show. Tell your friends, let them know they can enjoy the show for the extremely affordable cost of $0 right now at FRWOnline.com, YouTube, all your favorites. Call your friends. As you should say, let them know. Free edition of the Big Vinny V Show. Covering a very newsworthy weekend for TNA Wrestling. And I'm sure by now you've all heard about this if you've any interest in pro wrestling at all. But after a year and a half build to winning the World Heavyweight Championship, Mike Santana finally got it done at Bound for Glory in October. The company promptly decided now is a good time to shut down for a month and bring this momentum to a screeching halt. And when they came back with live shows a month later, the very first thing they did was take that title right back off of Mike Santana. So that's the big story. And we're going to get into the hows and whos and wheres and whys as, well, right now, in fact. Hope you enjoyed the show, the free edition of the Big Vinny V Show. It is Tuesday, November 18th, 2025. And I'm here to review... First of all, Impact. I watched TNA Impact November 13th, 2025. I did not watch the entire show. I watched the opening segment and the closing segment. Frankly, just a time crunch. I didn't have time to watch Impact and the app special Turning Point the next night. So, yes, they did Bound for Glory in October. They took a month off. They did a month of studio shows. They did a bunch of promo shows and best of recaps. They had a show last week that had matches on it, most of which were taped in September. Some of which were taped months or even years before that. And this is their first live show back. And it is live from Full Sail University in Orlando, Florida. An absolutely tiny crowd compared to the recent shows I've been watching. It's full for Full Sail, but it's a small building. And it's funny, there's the clip going around, of course, of Chris Jericho talking about how impressed he was with the crowd size of Bound for Glory. And to go from that to this was a cognitive dissonance. Hard to believe it's the same promotion. So Santana comes out with his world championship. And the Florida crowd, many of whom I assume are also the NXT fans, but they're chanting, "You whooped trick." First thing he says, "If you ask me, that took a little too long." And that gets to part of the problem with all this. But yes, they probably should have had Santana win the title of the New York show. I've been told it was Long Island, not New York City, and thus not technically Santana's hometown. But you know, we all know it's the greater New York metropolitan area is where that show was held. And they hyped it as it was in front of his hometown. And he did not get the job done in that three-way with Trick and Joe Hendry as well. In hindsight, I mean, they've made a lot of mistakes over the past, decades. But that was a big one. So he speaks Spanish for a while. I don't speak Spanish, but I was able to catch "The World is Possible." That much I got. All the white people in the crowd are chanting "Boricua, Boricua." That's always fun. I believed in me. My baby girl at home believed in me. After falling countless times, he said, that's his exact quote. Easy for me to say. Falling countless times, he stands there as the new world champion. He did, in fact, fall countless times. And part of that, I'm sure he meant as in his personal life, the demons he's battled. But also, here in TNA, he has been booked to fall countless times before finally winning. Puts over the roster, mentions there's a target on his back, and he mentions that Nick Nemeth and Frankie Kazarian are both holding the Call Your Shot Gauntlet Trophy. I completely forgot about that in the month away. They do the Call Your Shot Gauntlet. It's their version of Money in the Bank. It's a battle royal, essentially. The winner gets a trophy, which they can cash in for a title shot whenever they want. And this year, it was a tie. Nick Nemeth and Frankie Kazarian tied. Each man is carrying this one trophy, two wrestlers. The story of TNA is literally two men, one cup. So, eventually, Nemeth interrupts. And by Nemeth, I mean Ryan Nemeth. "How dare you talk about my big brother when he's not here to defend himself? You're going to lose that title faster than I can say Orlando sucks." I've only been to Orlando once. It was a long time ago that I was there. But in general, I'm with Ryan on this one. So eventually, Ryan goes to throw a slap. Santana easily blocks it. He determines he's going to go to Santino. I always get Santana and Santino. had to be very careful when I say their names. He's going to go to Santino, get this a title defense against you, the least deserving man on the roster. I will destroy you so you can go tell your big brother you're a scrub and you didn't get the job done. We're now skipping to the end of Impact. So it is, in fact, Ryan Nemeth versus Mike Santana. Mike destroys him for a while. He preps for Spin the Block, the Discus Lariat. That's his finish. When Nick Nemeth appears backstage, and I'm guessing that whatever Nick was up to, I know a lot of people have had travel issues lately in the USA, but I don't think he was 1,000 miles of this building. They probably found an empty closet somewhere at some indie show where he could film this. And he does have the Call Your Shot Gauntlet trophy, so he may have actually had that with him. But he is suddenly jumped and laid out by a masked, hooded figure, an unknown assailant, and destroyed. At this point, a swarm of NXT benchwarmers hits the ring for the DQ. For the most part, this is guys who have not been seen on NXT TV in months. Brooks Jensen, High Rise is out there. Stax has been around, but not doing much since he left the Mafia family dissolved. Lexus King has been here and there. Robert Stone is interesting because he's allegedly Ava's lieutenant in the NXT Brain Trust. And B, of course, he was once a big part of TNA as a wrestler, as Robbie E in the Bromans, a very fun team where he was, in fact, managed by Joaquin Wilde, who is now a wrestler for WWE. So they all destroy Santana. They're especially targeting his arm, the Spin the Block arm. Steve Macklin tries to save. The Hometown Man tries to save. They're all killed. The Rascals, three of them, hit the ring. They're still killed. And they put Santana in an armbar. Oh, Charles Dempsey is out there, who has been, not been on NXT TV in weeks. He has been, in fact, in Japan. But he's been absent on NXT. But he's here now trying to break Santana's arm. They pilmanize the arm. And then they just leave. Mission accomplished. They beat up Santana and they left. Now Kazarian's music hits. Now he has the Call Your Shot Gauntlet trophy. So we're to believe that, again, there is only one trophy that they must share. And whoever this masked person was that took it from Nick Nemeth has now delivered it to Frankie Kazarian. So Frankie goes to cash this in on a wounded champion. The referee is very reluctant to start the match, but it's his job, so he does. Santana charges right into a Fade the Black as a two count. Kazarian goes for a shitty chicken wing. Santana fights out and hits one boot. He goes for Spin the Block, but he can't even throw the arm. His arm gives out right away, and Frankie hits a roll up and wins. And the show immediately fades to black. There you go. Frankie Kazarian, your new TNA World Champion. So that's how it went down. Now I've seen it with my own eyes. I heard it, thought that sounded stupid. I heard there were some extenuating circumstances. It's not like Frankie just out-wrestled him and pinned him in a minute. It was part of the title loss was part of a larger picture, which is true. But I watched it. I went into it with an open mind, as open as I could. Watched it unfold, and I can tell you right here, no, I do not like it. It did get people talking. It got people talking about how much TNA sucks, and it's funny how bad it is, and they don't want to watch it. I don't think this is going to get people to tune in. We'll see how many people watch Turning Point. And maybe a bigger deal, we'll see how many people watch Impact this coming Thursday, the 21st. That will tell us whether or not this whole thing worked. But I think it's a big giant middle finger to the people who were around to watch this story unfold. Santana talked about he returned to TNA in April of 2025, and the very first thing he said was that he wants to be the TNA World Champion again. He's starting the chase for that right now, and off he went. And there were some bumps along the way and some side quests, as they call them in the gaming world, that he had to overcome before he got back in the main chapter. But he got to be the main event guy, and he lost a title shot, and he lost another title shot. I want to say, I think he lost to Nick Nemeth somewhere, lost to Nemeth or Joe late in 2024, Joe Henry, one of those two. But then he had a title shot against Trick very early on in Trick's reign, and he failed. He had a second title shot in the three-way I talked about earlier in New York, in Long Island, where he failed there. He finally gets it done here. The story has gone too long. It's the conclusion of Return of the King, Lord of the Rings. It's just ending after ending after ending, and finally it just actually ends. And then immediately, it's like a P.S. We took the title back off him, just right away. And we're right back where we started. If you invested yourself emotionally in that journey, You wasted your time. You've gone nowhere. You are right now where you are, where you were on the Mike Santana journey 18 months ago. You've spun your wheels. You want to look at it as climbing and falling back down. You can do that too. I don't know if that's any better, but no, I didn't like it. I thought it was and I don't want to say maybe an insult to those who your regular customers. And like in another time, another place, this could have worked if Santana had had a defense or two and looked great and the was so dominant in his title defenses that he could only lose in a controversial fashion like this with an army of outsiders coming in. It could have worked, and like I say, in another time and place, but this wasn't right. This wasn't the right time to do it. And it reminded me of, let me give you all a history lesson. Some of you may remember this. Some of you, frankly, may have happened before you were born. In April of 2020, there was a wrestling promotion known as Extreme Championship Wrestling. At the time, it was the very clear third biggest promotion in the country behind, at the time, the World Wrestling Federation and World Championship Wrestling. Due to some contractual promotional nonsense that I don't have time to get into today, ECW champion Mike Awesome signed a contract with WCW without dropping the title first. It made a lot of people very, very angry. A lot of people in ECW very, very angry. They had to find a way to get this title off of him while, you know, trying to make something promotional and newsworthy and try to get eyeballs, try to get butts and seats and eyeballs on TVs and that kind of thing. So Paul Heyman's solution, never let it be said that Heyman's not a creative fella, he would bring in Mike Awesome for one more show. Everyone knew he was coming to drop this title as quickly as possible. And rather than have him drop it to a standard ECW wrestler, he dropped the title to a former ECW wrestler who was still who at that time was under contract to the WWF, that being Taz. And the story was a WWF wrestler pinned a WCW wrestler to win the ECW championship at an ECW show. And it got a lot of attention. It got a lot of headlines. They got the ECW title on SmackDown, where, of course, Triple H pinned him. And it was never going to last long. It's not like Taz is going to come in for a six-month run here for another company, as he's still under contract to WWF. So when he goes to drop it a couple weeks later, he's going to drop it to Mr. ECW, Tommy Dreamer. And Tommy Dreamer was the ultimate underdog. They like to compare his character to Bruce Willis and Die Hard John McClane. The guy is always fighting back under overwhelming odds. The every man who won't give up. But every man doesn't win a lot of championships. The whole story was Tommy Dreamer never pinned Raven for years and years and years before he finally got it. He never won the ECW title for years and years and years. He's finally going to win it, and everyone knows Taz is dropping this title. So Dreamer goes into this thing. He pins Taz. He is finally the ECW champion, and he is immediately on the spot challenged by Just Incredible. Dreamer's a fighting champion. He accepts. Credible beats him. Credible is now your ECW champion. And the big tagline was Tommy Dreamer never even got to hold the belt. Santana obviously got to hold the belt. He could hold it in the hallways of his house as he's not doing shows for a month while they took time off. But he comes out in the very next show and immediately drops it before he never had a successful title defense. He beat Ryan Nemeth by DQ, I guess, or was a draw. And then Kazarian cashed in and won. And I just felt, I couldn't help but note that that same Tommy Dreamer is now one of the men in charge of TNA. And I don't know if it was his decision. I don't even really know if it was his idea. But it seemed awfully, awfully familiar. And if you're wondering how successful that was to have Tommy Dreamer finally win the title and not make it a feel-good moment, well, ECW is out of business a year later. I'm not saying that's why. And I'm not saying TNA is going to be out of business a year later. I'm just saying it didn't work then. I don't think it's going to work now. When you have taken fans on a journey this long, just let them be happy for a while. Just give them a bit of time to enjoy it and celebrate their hero and be happy about that before you get back to the chase. Not everything has to be about the chase. So there you go. That was the title match itself. I then watched all of TNA Turning Point, November 14th, 2025. A recap of Santana's wacky adventure the night before opens the show. Then we get a post-show, post-impact promo from Kaz. And they're outright trolling fans with this. They know people are pissed. Go ahead and cry. Get used to crying. I'm going to be a TNA champion for a long, long time. We're back in Full Sail 24 hours later. Somehow it felt much bigger here than it did on Impact. I don't know if they squeezed more people in the building, if the entranceway was fancier, but it came off much better than it did on Impact. This is absolutely turning point, Tom Hannifin screams. And actually, I think last night was the turning point. This is the aftermath of the turning point. So this show, long story short, it was fine for the first half. It was really, really good for the second half with a big name returning and one of my favorite TNA matches in all 2025. Our opener, M by Elegance versus Kalani Jordan for the Knockouts title. So this thing with Kalani is fucked up and weird, man. For most of this year, in fact, it's been impossible to tell on NXT whether she is a heel or a babyface. It's just been, there's been no distinction. TNA has Ash by Elegance. She has to drop the title for physical reasons. I believe it's physical. I don't think they ever publicly said that, but she can't wrestle. So their response, and this is also is a Paul Heyman, something Paul Heyman would have done. Let's bring in an outside name and make them the champion right away to get a fresh start. So they bring in Kalani Jordan from NXT. She wins the Knockouts title. And even though she's coming in from the outside, she's treated like a babyface in TNA, all the shows she has done. She goes back to NXT, and they start doing the gimmick where she's the Knockouts. She's the TNA Knockouts champion. She's the captain of Team TNA in the showdown they did. So she has been competing along the side of TNA, carrying the TNA banner. And so the NXT locker room has turned on her. Her bag is dumped out in the hallway. She's not welcome in there anymore. She came out and cut a heel promo in the ring, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago. It was the best promo she's ever done. She's way, way, way better off as a heel. And they've continued with that there. And then she comes out here. I know she wrestled Impact, too. I did not watch that for the reasons I stated, but she comes out here. So Kalani Jordan is now an NXT wrestler who is a TNA champion, who is a heel in NXT, but a babyface in TNA. Wrestling is weird, man. So she comes out. She's giving her gloves to fans. She's hugging and smiling people. I was bewildered. Right away, they had basically had a scripted NXT match, but it was not as rushed as usual. They had time for moments to sink in and just time for the match itself and for the fans to take a breath once in a while. It was a huge improvement in that regard. Kalani does the moonsault attack to the floor where you're standing on the floor. She goes to the top rope. She does the big moonsault. But she always does it where she like flips over you and lands on her feet behind you. So she's really just doing a backflip and you're there and you pretend that it gets you and you fall down. This time, she actually landed in front of M by Elegance and threw like a back elbow to try to make some kind of contact. And this, none of these are any good. M tries to do a drop toe hold into the ropes, but undershoots her target. And so Kalani face plants, which was much funnier. And M hits a cool wheelbarrow suplex, misses a moonsault. We see assorted other challengers watching backstage. We'll get to them in a minute here. They trade strikes, go back and forth for several minutes. Kalani keeps getting near falls. She gets a long half crab, a lot of tease finishes. And most of the time in wrestling these days, when someone gets three or four near falls in a row, you know they're going to get hit with one move and pinned. That's not what happened here. She got three or four near falls in a row. There is one last flurry of offense, and Kalani hit a stomp out of the corner and the split leg moonsault to win. So the last like 3 minutes of this match was like 95% Kalani, and she finally put her away. It was a decent little opener, all things considered. Gia then interviews Lei Ying Lee, Zaya Brookside, and Mara Shade at ring backstage, I should say. Lei Ying Lee has a title shot against Kalani at Gold Rush in a three-way, also involving Jordan Grace and NXT. But tonight, she and Zaya have a tag team title match against The Inspiration. They leave to prepare for that. Mara Shade is still there. She says she found herself in TNA. She wants to make sure Kalani doesn't lose herself here. So now I'm very confused about Kalani, and now I'm very confused about Mara Shade as well. Ryan Nemeth interrupts to plug the main event of Nick Nemeth, his big brother, and Frankie Kazarian teaming together. As for Mara, he runs her down, wants to know why her hair always looks so wet. We have towels in the building, he points out. They're free. But he called them both stupid and lazy, both Mara and Gia Miller. He suggests Nick might cash in his Call Your Shot Gauntlet trophy on Kazarian tonight, which I guess he can do that. I figured it was a tie in the match and there was only one trophy and whoever cashed it in first would just get to cash it in and the other guy was SOL. But apparently, they just take turns with it because Kazarian used his, but Nick still won, so he can still do it. Okay. They run down the card, which I only mentioned here because we're going to review the matches anyway. No point in me writing it down now. But the main event is supposed to be Mike Santana and Steve Maclin versus Nick Nemeth and Frankie Kazarian. But in the 24 hours since he lost the world title at the end of Impact, Mike Santana has not been seen or heard from. Nobody knows where he is. Santino and Ariana Grace and Ava from NXT have a meeting backstage. Now, I understand a lot of people in pro wrestling are very sensitive. A lot of them have very thin skin, don't respond to criticism very well. I want to make it clear, everything I have about to say about Ava is in reference to the character Ava and the way she is written. It's not talking about the performer who portrays the character of Ava on NXT and sometimes in TNA. I'm talking about the character herself. Got it? Y'all good? Okay. She's a boob. Ava is a dumb person. If you watch NXT, it's clear every week. She's lazy. She doesn't actually want to do the job. She encourages the inmates to run the asylum. She doesn't want to be there. So the first thing she does is deny any knowledge of the invasion that happened on Impact the night before. Absolutely consistent with her character. Ava never knows what's going on. She never has any control of anything. But she's upset. She's peeved that Santino's upset that her locker room crashed his show. And then she says, "So help me God. Had I a Bible here, I would lay my hand upon it and take an oath before all of you." She actually said this. "I'll handle my locker room. You handle yours." I'm going to say this a second time. "I'll handle my locker room. You handle yours." Ava is not handling her locker room. Ava never handles her locker room. The whole point of NXT in 2025 is the way the locker room handles Ava. She lets her locker room run wild in other promotions. Doesn't do anything to stop it. Doesn't do anything to prevent it. He's right. Santino's justified. Ava's crew ruined his show. He should be hot at her. And she should be taking some kind of responsibility and promising some kind of action to prevent it from happening in the future. She does eventually say she's going to get more security. I think it's actually later in the show. But on the whole here, she walked out taking no responsibility. She acted like she was the victim because Santino was mad at her. She's so bad at her job. The character of Ava is so bad at her job. A little thing, by the way, a small nitpick, but it is a thing on this Turning Point show. All the backstage promos are way too quiet. I had to crank the volume all the way up for the promos and then crank it all the way back down for when the actual matches started. Something to watch for and improve on. AJ Francis versus BDE. If you're not familiar with BDE, he apparently is a YouTuber of some sort. Yeah, and they point out he's done some indie matches. He picked a fight with AJ Francis, got chokeslammed through a table. They said he's wrestled AJ Francis a lot of the indies. I looked it up per cage match. This is BDE's 15th match ever, and AJ Francis has been in 7 of them. So yes, it appears they have worked together a lot. It's mostly AJ dominating him. AJ's a big giant ex-NFL lineman. BDE is both small and skinny, a very dangerous combo. He can do some cool dives. He hits a big tope right away and a big like Undertaker dive over the ropes. But AJ cuts him off and methodically works him over for a bit. Power bombs him sort of into the apron, which is the absolute worst way to take that bump. If you must take an apron power bomb, you still want to land flat on it. You don't want to land half on the edge and then fall to the floor. That looked absolutely no fun. Eventually, BDE makes his comeback. Wrestling-wise, he's basically Orange Cassidy without the gimmick. Very similar physique, very similar style. It's all perpetual motion, all jumping and rebounding off the ropes. It's all DDTs. AJ tries a choke slam. BDE jumps up over his head, turns it into a destroyer, follows with the Bryan Danielson knee strike for 2. But he misses a frog splash, and AJ follows with a spear and the choke slam. He stops to badmouth BDE. BDE demands more, so AJ choke slams him again and finally pins him. I give this 2.25 stars on the app special scale. probably 6 stars on the 15th match ever scale. It was a perfectly fine showing from this BDE. The BioFlex injury report. Mike Santana's right arm and the status thereof are undetermined. Elijah, who returned at Bound for Glory to help Santana win, and he did a concert on Impact the night before, which I did not watch. Apparently, he was attacked by Mustafa Ali on that show. The guitar was broken over his surgically repaired triceps, and he is out again. And that's not good news. Yeah, Elijah should be back sooner than later. And Nick Nemeth has also been cleared after the backstage attack last night. Which apparently, now that it happened, by the way, we're all just moving on. Nick never mentioned it. Ryan never mentioned it. The announcers barely mentioned it. Some fella beat up Nick Nemeth backstage and stole his trophy. And Nick said, shucks, and moved on with life. G interviews Steve Maclin. He hasn't heard from Santana either. If necessary, he's willing to fight 10-on-1 alone. If he has to fight both these guys in this tag match and all these NXT goofs as well. He's ready for Nemeth. He's ready for Kazarian. Ready for the NXT PC boys to send their ass back to that building on Forsyth and call it a day. That was a great line. Indy Hartwell versus Danny Luna in a no DQ match. And this is set up on Impact. They are having a match, a regular match, and Danny grabbed a chair, but Indy got a hold of it and used it, so she got DQ'd. Now they have a no DQ match. And man, they start brawling. They brawl in the aisle, and they brought it to ringside. And Indy reaches under this ring, and under this ring apparently is a Dungeons & Dragons bag of holding. Every weapon in the world she's yanking out from under this. And there's trash cans, and there's chairs, and there's kendo sticks, and trash can lids, and fire extinguishers, and magic wands, and who the hell knows what else. Even Ray Wolf's like, okay, there's enough weapons. You got enough. You don't need to use all of them now. She finally grabs the table. The big spot of the match, and boy, this is a big spot. They are fighting on the apron over a table that's been set up on the floor. Danny finds powder from somewhere, blinds Indy with it, and then does her deadlift superplex spot. So Indy is standing on the apron. Danny stands in the middle rope and suplexes her opponent in. She's done it a lot lately. Now she's doing it where she'll actually throw you in the air, catch you, and then suplex you, which is really, really cool. This time she did it, and I don't know if this is the plan. I suspect it was not the plan, but Indy took a full bump over and lands on her belly, sort of. Kind of on her belly, kind of on her face, kind of on her shoulder. Absolutely horrifying. To be perfectly frank, Indy Hartwell's not a great athlete, not a particularly good pro wrestler, and watching her take this bump, knowing she is not in control of her body the way most other wrestlers are, scared me very, very much. But she seemed to survive. They do a bunch of hardcore stuff. They do drop toe holds onto chairs and lariats into chairs when somebody's sitting in them. And Blue Thunder Bomb onto chairs. Indy makes a comeback, hits a spine buster onto a ladder. I bet that sucked. They start fighting on the apron over the table again. This time, Danny teases a German from the outside of the ring, overhead, through the table behind her. Thankfully, they did not deliver that. Indy finally boots her, and Danny gently lays herself down on the table so Indy can go up top. Put her through that table with a big elbow off the top rope to the floor. A big TNA chant gets the most heat in the match. And finally, Danny sets up one more chair, but Indy cuts her off. Drops Danny across the chair with the Hurts Donut onto the chair. Gets the win. It was mostly a bunch of random weapon spots, but the heat spot was great, and they ended at the peak for absolute sure. And when I sat back and thought of it, I said, you know what? I don't remember seeing a better match from Indy Hartwell. So I can call this nothing but a success. So Ava returns. That boob, Ava, returns to meet with Santino and Ariana. Here she says, I have hired extra security to stop my crew from attacking. Finally taking some kind of responsibility for the men under her charge, trying to stop them from ruining the show of this other promotion that they're working with, have a partnership with. He's taking an active role in trying to make things better. I'm sure everything will work out fine. Then, and this absolutely blew my mind, Santino apologizes to Ava. Santino apologized to Ava for losing his cool. And as she walks away, Santino is sure to add, please say hi to your papa for me. And I am now starting to come around to the idea that this is, in fact, the gimmick. Ava only has a job and is only allowed to keep her job because of who her father is. And they're all afraid the Rock's going to come in and fire them if they do anything to punish Ava for doing a bad job, for being bad at her job. It's nepotism in action. That is the storyline. I believe that is canon. I think that is what we as fans, we as viewers, are supposed to believe. Everyone knows how bad she's at this, but they're afraid to do anything because there's a higher power that can end their careers whenever he wants. The advertised match is The Inspiration versus Victoria Crawford and Tessa Blanchard versus the Angel Warriors in a three-way for the Knockouts title. They advertise it at the beginning of the show. They all come out, and then Tessa does a promo to announce she is not medically cleared to compete. She's being replaced by Mila Moore, who I'm not familiar with, but apparently on Impact, they announced she had signed. I watched her in this match. She seemed totally fine. She carried herself like a star and a pro wrestler, never got out like a deer in a headlights look, never looked panicked, always looked like she belonged in a pro wrestling ring. At the same time, in a short match with five other people, she did do a long chin lock. That strikes me as someone who's a limited move set, to put it as nerdy as possible. The Inspiration, who say what you will about them, they are creative. They come out dressed like referees. They have like black and white zebra stripe brassieres on. And they do a spot where there's a big six-way going on. And they point all the others, you. And they roll their fingers and they try to eject them to the back, to the locker room. Because ejections in pro wrestling, in any promotion in 2025, always get a giant pop. It didn't work here. I think the referee gear may have been a little too subtle. They may have rather turned down the sex appeal and just worn the polo shirts like all the other referees do. It did not work with this crowd. I popped. Made me laugh. The match, they do some stuff. It breaks down to a six-way. The crowd is just absolutely dead. They do not care about the six-way brawl. They do not care about the sextuple down. There's an elaborate spot where one of the Inspirers dodges a dive. And whoever was doing the dive, I didn't write it down, but somebody wipes out Mila Moore and Victoria Crawford on the outside with a dive. This leaves Brookside in the ring. So it must have been Lady Yingli with a dive. Brookside's in the ring with both the Inspiration. They promptly hit their move. And as the referee is counting three, the other Inspirer in her referee gear counts three as well. That part was funny. Matches itself was a giant waste of time. Would have been significantly better if any two of these teams just did a 2-on-2 match instead of doing this three-way just to squeeze bodies onto the show. Cedric Alexander and the Hardys versus Mustafa Ali and the Great Hands. The Hardys are now wrestling in blue jeans, you know, regular denim jeans, and plain blue tank tops, royal blue tank tops. There's no logo. There's no name. There's no design. They're just plain blue. There's like no merch value here. It's really weird. It's not like the Hardys never wrestled in shirts. They wrestled in shirts both of the most of their careers. They got famous wrestling in shirts. So it's not, that's not the issue. The issue is these are just absolute plain, frankly, cheap-looking blue shirts. Very odd. So they do some comedy. Most of the action of the match was Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali tearing things up, as they have done so many times before. It's a WrestleMania rematch and all that. But Cedric gets knocked outside. Special Agent Zero boots him in the face. The ensuing ref, you suck chant. Maybe the most heated thing on the show. There's a lot of great tag team teases, or great hot tag teases. After all, it's a Hardys match. And I thought about it. I looked at it like, all six of these guys are great. They know what they're doing. So Matt finally gets the hot tag, and he's running wild. And he goes for a side effect on John Skyler. And of all the people on this show to get lost beyond all recognition, Matt Hardy and John Skyler. He grabs him the side effect, a move I've seen him do for 20 years now. If you're taking this move, you jump up, you kick your legs out, you go to a flat on your back. It's very simple. I don't know what happened or who screwed up or who tried to do what. They just fell down on top of each other, to the point where neither guy knew whether he should be selling or whether he should be on the attack. That was the worst moment on the show. It involved Matt Hardy and John Skyler. Shit happens. What are you going to do? So Ali clobbers Matt with some kind of gimmick. They just keep going. Jeff gets a hot tag. Tasha Steeles ends up in the ring. She's on Molly's back. So Matt twists of fates both of them and makes a cover, but Special Agent Zero pulls the referee out of the ring. He then gets in the ring to confront the Hardys, and he's still out there. I understand the gimmick. The gimmick is he's Ollie's bodyguard. He's part of the Secret Service or whatever. So for the gimmick, he needs to be wearing the slacks and the whole button-up white shirt with the long sleeves. But we saw him wrestle. I think it was a Bound for Glory. The dude's ripped. He looks way better with his shirt off. So if he's going to do this, if he's going to get into the ring and physically confront guys, that shirt's got to go, man. Get the male stripper, tear away Velcro or whatever, but it looks much better that way. He is in the ring confronting the Hardys. Cedric passes them chairs, and they beat this Special Agent Zero with chairs. He's trying to flee to the back. They follow him to beat him with the chairs. Speaking of things that remind me of the Attitude Era, I guess this technically is right after the Attitude Era, but when Brock Lesnar first showed up in WWE in 2002, I think, the gimmick was at first he just ran in and destroyed people. And eventually the Hardys got tired of him destroying them. And I'm pretty sure his first match on pay-per-view was a one-on-two handicap match against both Hardys. So I was reminded of that. And it's funny how things go in circles. Guys have ideas. Hey, here's something we did 20 years ago. No one's seen it since. Let's do it now. That's what I was reminded of, is the Hardys versus Brock Lesnar, watching the Hardys try to turn Agent Zero into the biggest monster they can make him. But it backfires. It leaves Cedric Alexander alone in the ring. Ali hits a low blow, hits a cradle, and wins. The match was actually really great, except that one horrible spot, and then the very goofy finish. Best thing of the show, one of the best things I've seen in TNA all year, the system and a mystery partner, the system versus the Rascals and a mystery partner. Much as I screwed up there introducing this match, the ring announcer also screwed up because she introduced the fourth Rascal as Desmond Alexander. Hannafin is sure to growl out, "That's Desmond Xavier!" And this, of course, is Wes Lee, who has been in NXT for years and years and years. Last year, there was the Rascals reunion, and for a few months there in the summer of 2024, the Rascals were my favorite act in all of wrestling. And then Wes did a heel turn. They had a little feud there for a bit, and that went his way. And since then, Wes did hardly anything. He was managing High Rise, the former Shot Putters, who are also not doing much as of late, except being part of this invasion angle. And he just disappeared, and then they released him. And apparently the story is he did not have a WWE contract. He had an NXT contract, which means he only had a 30-day non-compete, and so he's free to come back to TNA, in fact, and quote-unquote reunite with the Rascals. So it was, for years and years, Desmond Xavier, Zachary Wentz, and Trey Miguel as a trio in the Rascals. They went their separate ways. It was Wes and Zach Wentz in NXT, whatever Zach's name in NXT was for a bit. Zach got canned there. He came back here. He reunited with Trey Miguel. They brought in Myron Reed. Point being, it's the first time these four dudes have been united as the Rascals ever. They've been friends forever. They all came up in the Ohio indie scene together. It was their first time as a four-man unit. It was a big deal. Trey Miguel was actually weeping about how much this meant to him. And he comes in here, and man, TNA needs this dude, and this dude needs to be in TNA. Because he did the heel turn with the Rascals, and it was fine for a bit. I think he got like one title shot against Trick Williams when Trick was a babyface, and it was just been on the shelf at best, or managing High Rise. They're not doing anything with him. He comes in here, got the hair all grown back out again. It looks cool. He's happy and smiling. He's motivated. He looks so great here. And the good news is everyone looked great. So TNA has had a massive talent drain over the past year or so. The Machine Guns left. The ABC left. Of course, one was injured. That didn't help. Joe Hendry is apparently gone. Josh Alexander's gone. They've lost a bunch of their big names. They needed a new face to come in and freshen things up. And man, if Desmond Xavier is not that guy. Just so much fun watching this. Everyone was having a good time in the ring, which meant you had a good time out of the ring watching them. So for a while there, it was funny at first because the announcers, they just pretended the Rascals had always been on the same page. Eventually, they just point out the breakup they had in 2024. They just wipe it away. Families fight, families get back together. So here we are. And there's a bit of a heat segment on there to set up a hot tag to Desmond, and he runs wild and he looks awesome. And then it is 10 minutes of party match greatness. And the other name of this match, JDC, the former Johnny Curtis, the former Fandango, who has been around a long, long time. He was trained by Killer Kowalski, for God's sake. He's been in this for not just a minute, several minutes. And for God, most of the past decade, he has been coasting is the wrong word. Living on the gimmick, the attitude, promos. Kind of, he joined the system as kind of an oddball, but he just had nothing else to do. Dude, I don't know what got into him. He was reborn here. He's hitting springboard dives and shit. He looked great. He looked 20 years younger. They were teasing it like he's on a retirement run, which I guess is possible because, as mentioned, he's been doing this a long, long time. But there's no indication this was his last match or anything. He didn't do any promo that I saw that said he was going to hang him up after this. But they were teasing like the door's about to close in this JDC. And if that's true, what a way to go out. So Myron Reed's got this move called Flame On. It's a running. The opponent stands in the apron. Reed runs out of the ring, hits a cutter, goes to the floor. I actually just saw a clip of MJF doing this to, I think, Hangman in AEW a while back. But killer, craziest move. Here, much better, because there's like 500 guys outside. He did the move on to. They all caught him. They keep going and going and going. I think they did a sequence where I think all eight guys hit a top rope move one at a time. The longer this goes, the crazier it gets. The Rascals have some kind of 4-on-1 quadruple team move called the Soup Kitchen, where they hit this. It involves 4 feet stomping onto one dude's belly. Move saves by powerbombing a Rascal onto the pin. Just keeps getting insane, more and more insane. The Rascals hit hot fire flame, which where one guy does a moonsault and his partner pushes him onto the pile. They do one outside. They do one inside. And Desmond Xavier, in his return to the company, goes up top, hits a spiral tap and gets the win. Outstanding party match. One of the best matches in all of TNA in all of 2025. Well, very well worth going out of your way to see. That ruled. Eric Young confronts Santino backstage. Says every problem in TNA started, every TNA problem with NXT started with Santino. We found you out, he says. And he hands Santino a paper reading, "The cleanse is coming." Leon Slater versus Rich Swann. And if that match, that party match I just reviewed, wasn't the best match in TNA, then the Leon Slater, Javon Evans match probably was the best match in TNA all year. Minus the Dark State finish, of course. But they had a good match here, but it was like good TV main event good, as opposed to good PLE match good. It was not as good as the 8-man that it followed. Leon gets pissed off. Rich is showboating and dancing, so Leon gets pissed off. And for a guy who's like, his image is all he does is flips, he's actually really, really good at getting pissed off and fighting ugly and fighting aggressively. But he charges into the corner. He gets backdropped over the top rope to the floor, and he goes bang! Really, really loud into the steel steps. And if you know anything at all about the nature of pro wrestling and you watch this move, the youngest child could see it was done very, very safely. He landed on his feet on the floor. He then bent over and slapped his hand, not his face, his hand very, very hard into the steel steps so it goes bang. But the bang was so loud and the timing and execution was so great that the crowd thought he had really like lost an eye. A hush falls over. They're like holding their breath to see if Leon has survived this mighty bang. He did survive. The match continues, although he is selling his eye and selling vision problems the rest of the way. Catches him at one point. He has a spinning emerald frozen. That was a cool move. He got cut again. Leon has a top rope splash for two. Comes back. Gets a handspring cutter and a lethal injection. That's what that was called. He got the os cutter and lethal injection confused. But he gets the lethal injection of 450. That gets two. He goes up top. Rich Swann does. Leon brings him down with a twisty arm drag thing. And the announcers, who are very good at their job, they say this is the same move Rich Swann used to take Eric Young off the top rope and win the world title in TNA many years ago. So Leon grabs Swan and hits, I swear to God, the best Styles Clash ever, because he grabs him, hooks him upside down, hooks the arms behind his legs, and just about 8 feet into the air. It looked like he was coming off the middle rope or something. Bang! Hits him with the Styles Clash. Not to be confused with the bang when he hit the stairs. But he follows with the Swanton 450 and gets the win. Like I say, like a really good TV main event. It was not the best thing on the show, but I'm happy I watched it. So in the aisle, Gia interviews Leon. And at this point, they reveal that Leon's grandmother, Valerie Slater, recently passed away. They have a very nice memorial graphic for Nan, as he called her. Crowd chanting Valerie. It was very, very lovely, actually. Leon thanks the crowd, says he would not be here without his Nan, his mom, and his sister. Everyone in TNA, thank you for that. You don't know how much that means. And then he goes back into worker mode. He's got another big match on Tuesday on NXT. It is, of course, Leon and Javon versus Dark State for the tag team titles. Like, they must win, which means they won't. But that's what's going to happen. Puts over all the things he and Javon have done. Vows that they will become the youngest NXT tag team champions of all time. Jamie in the chat here points out that on Impact, JDC said he's going to retire after Genesis next year, which I think that's early in the year, so he may only have a few months left. So there you go. JDC is on a retirement run, which, knowing you only got a handful of matches left, you're going to want to give it your all. So that explains a lot. Your main event, Steve Maclin and advertised partner Mike Santana versus Frankie Kazarian and Nick Nemeth. There is no Santana. Maclin comes out on his own. There's a pause. They don't play Santana's music. They don't play his video. The crowd is chanting for him. But instead, Nick Nemeth's music hits. And he comes out. And of course, Kazarian comes out. So Maclin just grabs the mic and says, well, it's just me. Screw it. And he starts fighting. He's fighting 2-on-1, laying them both out. Fighting 3-on-1 when Ryan Nemeth gets involved. Mara Sade comes out because he badmouthed her earlier. She drops Ryan with a super kick. He's taken to the back. But this distraction allows them to pitch Maclin to the stairs, hit a fame master for two, and they're working him over for a while. And for most of it, the two heels, two veteran 20-year vets, they know what the hell they're doing. They're just working him over and he's getting their big spots in, taking turns. It's all going smoothly. They have a match to win here and they're functioning as a good team. But eventually, they set Maclin up for a double suplex, And these two bumbling, dumbass, nincompoop heels, they can't get their timing right. No, you stand here. No, you throw your arm here. Gonna go on three. Do you mean go on 1, 2, 3 or 1, 2, 3 go? And they have a long delay trying to get their shit sorted out. And finally, Maclin knocks them both down, does the big double missile dropkick for the triple down. And then it's to the parking lot. A truck pulls up. A shirtless Mike Santana climbs out. He power strides out of the truck, past Santino, past security, through the metal detector. No one gets into Full Sail University without going through the metal detector. He strides down to the ring, where by the time he gets there, Maclin has crawled to the corner. Santana strides with that apron, tags himself in. Kazarian runs for his life. Santana just beats Nemeth's ass. There is a point where he's supposed to hit a dive on Kazarian. Nick's in the way. Santana's got to tell Nick to move. By the time he finally does this dive, Kazarian doesn't catch him at all. I don't think it sucked. So he starts selling his bad arm. Nemeth pounces, kicking the arm, snapping on the ropes. They take turns getting near falls on him, but he keeps kicking out of everything. And eventually, Santana catches Kazarian with spin the block out of nowhere. Even though he's fighting through the pain, he still crawls over. He gets the pin. It helped to rehab him after he lost that title, but does he feel cooler than he did a month ago? I think the answer to that is plainly yes. Show's not over. Nick is eyeballing Kazarian down in the ring, eyeballing that Call Your Shot Gauntlet trophy, looks at the trophy. Crowd is chanting, call your shot. And he grabs that trophy. He's about to call his shot when the NXT crew attacks again. Have I mentioned lately what a terrible character Ava the GM is and how awful she is at generally managing? Everything always goes wrong when she is in charge. When this character is put in charge of something, she is always massively, grotesquely incompetent, and this may have been a new low. She said, I will hire security to keep them out, and they hit the ring. There's no security anywhere in sight. So they're beating up Macklin. They're beating up Santana. They're beating up Nemeth. They're leaving Kazarian alone at first. Kazarian is down in the corner fighting to his feet. And eventually he gets up and he eyeballs them. He appears to have no idea what's going on. And they go after him. So the story does not appear to be that Kazarian is on the side of NXT. He was just in the right place at the right time to pick up the scraps after they caused a bunch of carnage and chaos. So I mentioned that Stax is a part of this NXT crew, and he's not been doing much on their show, so he came here to ruin TNA's show. He is also, in real life, engaged to Ariana Grace, who is also, in real life, Santino's daughter. So Santino gets in Stax's face, and they mention it's going to be his future son-in-law. As a married man myself, I can't think of a better way to piss off the in-laws than go ruin their job, essentially. Go to their workplace and stir shit up. Good way to get on the in-laws' bad side. Before Stax can explain himself, Brooks Jensen lays Santino out from behind. Security finally hits the ring. Matthew Rabel asks the obvious question, where were they 5 minutes ago? A great question. A brilliant question. I guess Ava went to 5 minute late security and tipped them extra. This goes on for a while. The Hardys music hits. They come down with chairs. They may have been swinging these chairs for an hour straight for all I know. They hit the ring, but they are also swarmed. They're beaten up. And then we fade to black. And man, did we need two bummer finishes in 24 hours from TNA? I didn't. I did not. That being said, the second half of that show was awfully great, especially the party match. So I got to give the show as a whole a thumbs up, even though the most newsworthy thing is the fall of Mike Santana, and I think that undid a lot of goodwill they had spent 18 months building. We'll see how it goes from here. That will do it for today, everyone. Thank you all for taking part of the festivities, enjoying the show. All of you in the YouTube chat, all of you listening and not contributing to the chat, you're still welcome. Still happy to have you here. Want to encourage you all to sign up at frwonline.com. Like a dozen shows a week, almost as good as this one. Between Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer and Mike Sempervivi and Filthy Tom Lawler and Craig Proper and Sean Garrett and Granny and many other people. Always a good time to be had at frwonline.com. We will all the wrestling podcasts you could ever hope for. Sign up today. And if you enjoyed this show, you need more Big Vinny V. I'm saying this for 2 years. Why is it always so hard for me? If you need more Big Vinny V in your life, you can always follow me on social media, vincentverhey.bluesky.social. If you really enjoy the show and want to show your appreciation, help a brother out and buy yourself a Cameo today. Cameo.com/VincentVerhey. Within reason, and for a small fee, I will say anything you like. I wish you happy anniversary, happy promotion, happy divorce. I will bury your enemies. I will bury your friends. I will give you dating tips. I will give you life advice. I will give you a pep talk. I will sing karaoke. These are all things real human beings have paid real money to have me do. And you can too. Cameo.com/VincentVerhey. Buy one today, buy one tomorrow. That was a good time, everyone. We'll do it again, not for free. Freeloading bastards. For money, we'll do another show next week.